administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has signaled that it is willing to return to the 2015 nuclear deal from which former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally exited in 2018 and reimposed anti-Tehran sanctions. But 2 weeks after taking the helm at the White House, Washington's return to the agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, still hangs in the balance. The U.S. says Iran should first come back to full compliance with the accord, but Tehran says it was Washington that walked away and hence it should fulfill all its obligations, which include the lifting of all sanctions. Amid the standoff, Iran's foreign minister warned that the Biden administration has a limited window of opportunity to re-enter the agreement. He, meanwhile, suggested the question over who must take the first step in returning to the JCPOA could be resolved by EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell.
He can put his hat as the coordinator of the joint position and sort of choreograph the actions that are needed to be taken by the United States and the actions that are needed to be taken by Iran.
In reaction, the European Union said it is working extremely hard to salvage the deal and is in talks with the U.S. administration to see if sanctions could be lifted. And this is how the U.S. reacted to Zarif's suggestion.
If Iran comes back into full compliance with its obligations under the JCPOA, the United States would do the same. And then we would then use that as a platform to build a longer and a stronger agreement that also addresses other areas of concern.
Such a stance was earlier echoed by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, which is in line with Washington's policy to expand the JCPOA beyond Iran's nuclear issue. French President Emmanuel Macron has also said Saudi Arabia should be involved in any new negotiations with Iran about the deal. But Iran's president has reiterated that the JCPOA remains unchanged.
I clearly tell the global community, and especially the countries in the JCPOA, whether it's 4+1 or maybe 5+1 in the future, that no clause of the JCPOA will change. Know this. And no one will be added to it.
After the U.S. pullout of the JCPOA in May 2018, Iran waited for a year and gave leeway to the European signatories, the EU, Britain, France, and Germany, to make up for the U.S. move. They, however, failed to live up to their commitments. Iran then reacted by scaling back on its commitments under the accord. Iran says its measures are fully reversible upon the full compliance by the remaining signatories. Presently, questions arise as whether the Biden administration will follow the path of its predecessor against Iran or will try to rectify the Trump-era policy, which has been described as a failed approach even by some of Washington's close allies.
Italy's President of the Republic, Sergio Mattarella, gave Mario Draghi a mandate to attempt to form a new government after efforts to salvage the coalition supporting outgoing Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte had failed. Draghi, 73 years of age, had largely vanished from public view since his mandate as President of the European Central Bank ended after 8 years in 2019. His name emerged as a potential prime minister when the government crisis sparked in Italy in mid-January. The crisis had been triggered by former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, whose unexpected decision to withdraw his small party's support to the previous executive had forced Conte to resign.
Con questa speranza,
I am confident that the unity and the capacity to give a responsible response will emerge from the discussion with the parties, with the groups in Parliament. The challenges are to defeat the pandemic, complete the vaccination campaign, offer responses to everyday problems, and relaunch the country using the extraordinary resources from the EU.
The country desperately needs to secure an immediate massive injection of liquidity into its staggering economy. Italy has reported its biggest contraction in GDP since the end of World War II following the pandemic. The National Bureau of Statistics estimates the country's economy shrank by almost 9% last year.
What is there to understand is if the next government will be technical or political. This is for Prime Minister designate Draghi to find out. Draghi unusually met with outgoing Prime Minister Conte after receiving the mandate to see if he can also count on his support.
It cannot be taken for granted that a Draghi executive would win substantial backing from parties across the political spectrum. Many five-star movement lawmakers have said they will not vote in favor of a technocrat government led by Draghi, arguing the only possible executive must be a political one.
Also, nationalist Brothers of Italy leader Giorgia Meloni warned her party would not support Draghi as prime minister, calling her lies. The anti-immigrant, anti-EU League party of Matteo Salvini and Silvio Berlusconi's center-right Forza Italia party to abstain any vote for him. Max Civili, Rome.
Russia's Sputnik V vaccine is more than 91% effective against COVID-19. The news was published Tuesday in The Lancet, a British medical journal. This is great news for all the countries already administering the vaccine and all those looking for alternative supplies.
It's unconditionally an epoch-making event. There are four vaccines in the world which published what's called the third phase of trials. Our vaccine is among the three most effective vaccines in the world.
After the announcement, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said every vaccine is welcome in the European Union. The bloc's vaccine rollout is lagging behind the UK and the US, and desperate and disappointed member states, including Hungary, are looking elsewhere for supplies.
The centralized vaccine procurement of Brussels has failed. This is risking the lives of Europeans and the quick relaunching of the European economy. That's why we have looked for new sources of supply. We were the first, but it is unlikely that we will be the only ones in the European Union in this effort.
Armenia, Belarus, and Serbia have already got Sputnik V. European countries which are not EU members and say they were losing out waiting for the COVAX program, which was supposed to make vaccines available to everyone, to deliver. Countries hard hit by Western sanctions have also approved Sputnik V. Venezuela has already received its first shipment, and Iran's first batch is expected any day now. Russia has donated 5,000 doses to the Palestinians in the occupied territories as well. The World Health Organization says to end the COVID-19 pandemic, it has to be ended for everyone, everywhere. Nonetheless, rich countries are hoarding and rolling out vaccines, while the least developed nations watch and wait. It may take years for the poorest to get the jab. Bianca Rahimi, London.
That's the precise number of refugees currently barely surviving in awful conditions on the islands of Greece, apparently a proud member of the 27-nation EU. Legislators have been discussing the situation here in the European Parliament, Brussels.
Most of the time, people are locked up in the camps. Does the Commission think this is imprisonment? And if not, what is the difference between this and imprisonment?
There are not enough toilets or hot showers in the overcrowded camps. EU lawmakers say this is all the more appalling against the backdrop of a global pandemic.
Tents have been set up in October, and only in January they start winterization, as if the arrival of winter was a big surprise. And they're tents. It's very basic.
The Parliament debate heard that 60% of the refugees have reported suicidal thoughts to doctors. On Lesbos alone, there are 129 babies under the age of one. EU nations pledged to take in 5,145 refugees from the islands, but just half that number have been relocated.
There are many people who have now been granted international protection who are still stuck in the camps. What's going to happen with them? Do we have commitment by other member states to take over people, and why is this not happening?
The argument has been made the EU has a special responsibility in this regard because of the very destabilizing roles some of the bloc's countries have played in Africa and in the Middle East.
The shape of the current political landscape in the EU does not inject confidence that the bloc's asylum policy will change anytime soon, according to experts.
There is across Europe now this sense that of xenophobia, of populism, of resistance to seeing more migration. So it makes it very, very tough to do.
Lawmakers say EU governments are using the pandemic as a reason to extricate themselves from their fundamental human rights responsibilities. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Epic. Epic. Glory. Glory. Honor. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
The limelight. Reflecting the influence of the Trump wing of the Republican Party, few GOP members have criticized Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene publicly. In the end, just 11 Republicans voted to discipline Marjorie Taylor Greene, despite the Republican Congresswoman having claimed space lasers had started wildfires in California. She had also suggested mass shootings didn't really happen in the United States and supported the assassination of Democratic politicians. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Adam Gabbat. The piece is titled, Extremist Marjorie Taylor Greene Loses Key Posts, but Republicans Slow to Censure. Stay with us for more of Adam Gabbat's article. Reflecting the influence of the Trump wing of the Republican Party, few GOP members have criticized Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene publicly. In the end, just 11 Republicans voted to discipline Marjorie Taylor Greene, despite the Republican Congresswoman having claimed space lasers had started wildfires in California. She had also suggested mass shootings didn't really happen in the United States and supported the assassination of Democratic politicians. The vote on whether to strip Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committee assignments neatly reflected the dilemma facing Republicans in 2021. Does the GOP continue on the unhinged conspiracy theory-laden path trodden by Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, or return to the staid, conservative outlook of the relatively recent past, potentially alienating Donald Trump's supporters along the way? Most Republican members of Congress chose the former, but Marjorie Taylor Greene was removed from her committee roles anyway, as 230 to 199 representatives voted to leave Greene with little to no power in the House of Representatives. The vote came after the Republican House leader Kevin McCarthy decided against punishing Green in an internal party meeting this week. A meeting where the Congresswoman reportedly received a standing ovation from some colleagues after she apologized for her past remarks. Those remarks, uncovered by Media Matters, a progressive media watchdog, include the claim by Marjorie Taylor Greene in 2018 that a laser beam from outer space had started a devastating wildfire in California. According to Greene, an executive from Rothschild Inc. was somehow involved in the incident. The Rothschild family have repeatedly been the subject of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Facebook post, Marjorie Taylor Greene also implied that Hillary Clinton was involved in the 1999 plane crash that killed John F. Kennedy Jr. Hillary Clinton was not, and suggested that Barack Obama deployed MS-13 gang members to kill a Democratic staffer. Barack Obama did not. In another Islamophobic Facebook post, uncovered by CNN, Marjorie Taylor Greene suggested that Muslims want to conquer the United States. Greene, who has expressed support for the anti-Semitic QAnon conspiracy theory, which has been linked with several acts of violence in the United States, will now be removed from her position on the House Budget and Education and Labor Committees, although she will probably remain a vocal presence outside of Congress. Reflecting the influence of the Trump wing of the Republican Party, few GOP members have criticized Marjorie Taylor Greene publicly. In a statement, Kevin McCarthy said he condemned Greene's past remarks but suggested the congresswoman would hold herself to a higher standard in the future. This Republican Party is a very big tent, McCarthy said on Wednesday, and everybody is invited in. Republican House Leader Kevin McCarthy and the GOP faced fierce criticisms from Democrats for their stance, including from Nancy Pelosi, who attacked Kevin McCarthy for his cowardly refusal to discipline Marjorie Taylor Greene. McCarthy's failure to lead his party effectively hands the keys over to Marjorie Taylor Greene, an anti-Semite, a QAnon adherent, and 9/11 truther, the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said. Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate Minority Leader, has been one of the very few to criticize Marjorie Taylor Greene, attacking her looming lies and conspiracy theories and calling her views a cancer for the Republican Party. In a sign of the dangers non-conspiracy-minded Republicans face, however, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska is facing a censure resolution from his own party in Nebraska for his criticism of Donald Trump's role in the U.S. Capitol riot. Senator Ben Sasse, seen as a relative moderate, responded to the Nebraska Republican Party in a video message on Thursday, 4th of February. "You are welcome to censure me again, but let's be clear about why this is happening. It's because I still believe, as you used to, that politics isn't about the weird worship of one dude," Senator Ben Sasse said. As the vote on her committee assignments loomed on Thursday, 4th of February, Marjorie Taylor Greene addressed some of her past comments, stating that school shootings are absolutely real and that 9/11 absolutely happened. By Friday morning, however, Marjorie Taylor Greene seemed unrepentant as she used the press conference to sum up the intertwining of the Republican Party and Donald Trump. "The party is his. It doesn't belong to anyone else," Taylor Green told reporters. On Twitter too, Green seemed upbeat. I woke up early this morning literally laughing, thinking about what a bunch of morons the Democrats, the 11-plus Democrats, are for giving someone like me free time, Green posted. In this democratic, tyrannical government, conservative Republicans have no say on committees anyway. Oh, this is going to be fun.
European News Bulletin.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Saeed Pourreza. Our top story this hour. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has blasted the 20-year jail term issued by Belgian courts to an Iranian diplomat over a supposed bomb plot against a terrorist organization, Mojahedin-e Khalq. The court alleged a diplomat, Asadullah Asadi, had plotted a bomb attack against an MKO gathering in Paris in 2018. Iran has condemned the conviction and sentencing as illegal and unjustifiable and accused the Belgian courts of being influenced by the anti-Iran terrorist group. Mojahedin-e Khalq organization, established in the 1960s, has conducted thousands of assassinations and bombings against Iranian officials and civilians since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. For more on that story, I'm joined by Professor Mohammad Mirandi of the University of Tehran's Institute for North American and European Studies. It's good to have you with us, Dr. Mirandi. It's been a while. I guess we can begin with your reaction to this sentencing in Belgium.
Well, thank you for having me. And I think it's pretty clear that for Iranians, the Mujahideen-e Khalq organization is a terrorist organization. It has murdered more Iranians than Al-Qaeda has Americans. In other words, on 9/11, 2001, roughly 3,000 Americans were killed by Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda. And in New York and in the United States, whereas the Mujahideen-e Khalq terrorist organization, which is a cult, they've killed up to 17,000 Iranians. And that is not including their activities that they carried out as a part of Saddam Hussein's army, because they went to Iraq and fought alongside Saddam Hussein against their own country. So, and we have to also compare the populations of the United States and Iran. So when we look at it from that perspective, the number of Iranians that these people have murdered through bomb attacks, as you pointed out, and terror attacks and suicide attacks are extremely high. I have my own experiences, and many people my age or older or somewhat younger have personal experiences in Tehran near my own home. A bomb exploded, killing an Armenian family of four, alongside I think seven other people on the streets as people were going to work in the morning. That's exactly what they used to do. They used to carry out attacks on ordinary people just to create fear and terror. What they did in Tehran was not dissimilar to what the Saudi and Turkish-backed ISIS would do in Iraq or in Syria.
Right. Well, their record is clear, isn't it? They were on the U.S. terrorist list for many years before they were taken off of it. How does a terrorist group, a cult, go to court and win a case like that? Is this perhaps all aimed at detracting from the fact that they are a terrorist organization?
Well, the Europeans in the United States, European governments in the United States, use terrorism to achieve their strategic objectives. The French government allowed them to work in France during the 1980s. And the United States, even during the period when they formally considered the MEK a terrorist organization, they allowed it to work in the United States under a different name or different names.
Right.
So while the MEK was carrying out terrorist attacks in Iran, and while it was fighting alongside Saddam Hussein against Iranians, they had offices throughout Europe, and they were funded by the Europeans and the Americans and other regimes that saw them as a useful ally. And right now they have a major camp, a very big camp in Albania. Mm-hmm. Thousands of their troops are based there, and at the moment one of their one of the things that they do is that they act as a cyber army. And of course Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram allow them to use tens of thousands of different accounts to carry out psychological warfare against Iran. And they also work alongside the Israeli regime for intelligence gathering, alongside the Americans to gather intelligence inside the country, and also to carry out terrorism.
And their annual gatherings have seen keynote speakers such as former National Security Advisor John Bolton, Trump's personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani, the former Canadian president, and many other people. What do you say to those people who think that this whole thing, this ruling in Belgium, is politically motivated, briefly?
Well, I don't know the details of the case, and for me it's completely irrelevant. Of course, this was a diplomat, and he could have been framed. I have no idea about the details. But for me, the issue is that they're harboring terrorists. They are harboring people who've killed Iranians, many thousands of Iranians. And if it was Iran that was doing this, the Europeans and Americans would probably be advocating war against Iran or airstrikes against the country. So the Europeans can destroy countries like Libya. They can impose starvation and sanctions on Yemen or Venezuela. They can carry out a dirty war in Syria. When they can do all those things, they can also support terrorist organizations that originate from Iran.
Professor Marandi in Tehran, pleasure talking to you. Thanks. To Russia now. The country has today expelled EU diplomats from Germany, Poland, and Sweden after accusing them of attending illegal rallies in support of jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny. All the officials have been ordered to leave the territory of the Russian Federation as soon as possible. The announcement comes just hours after EU Foreign Affairs Chief Josep Borrell met Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Moscow to discuss the 2.5-year prison sentencing of Navalny. Russia has previously lambasted Western nations for their, quote, interference on Russia's own domestic affairs in the case of Alexei Navalny. U.S. President Joe Biden is set to announce an end to U.S. support for the grueling 5-year Saudi-led military offensive on Yemen that's been dubbed the worst man-made humanitarian disaster. Yemen is the poorest country in the Arabian Peninsula and has been under intense Saudi blockade and bombardment. The move would fulfill a campaign pledge by Biden, whose administration plans to pursue diplomacy to end the overall conflict in Yemen after years of both Obama and Trump administrations supporting the Saudi-led bombing campaign. Biden now claims he sees the United States playing a more active and engaged role to end the war through talks. COVID-19 is also ravaging the Yemeni population, which is facing famine and starvation.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we covered the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
All right, let's get more on that story and bring you some tweets as well. Robert Nakesh joins me now with all of that. And Robert, Biden trying to put an end to a war that he and Barack Obama, when they were in power together, helped start, this cannot be a genuine move.
No, and a lot of people have observed after actually having watched the speech that Joe Biden did not announce that he is going to end the war on Yemen. In fact, what he did say is that he would stop supporting Saudi's offensive action. Now, we know that the United States has been taking more of a harsh line towards the Saudis, but this, I would argue, and many others have argued, is done strategically in order to push Saudi in the direction that they want them to go. But when we look at what he actually said in the speech, he said that they would not support offensive action, but they would support Saudi's defensive action, and that relevant arms sales would be canceled, but they would still sell weapons to Saudi Arabia. Of course, Saudi Arabia is the top weapons purchaser from the United States, and that doesn't seem to be changing. So for those thinking that the United States will stop supporting the war, it's completely inaccurate how it's being reported on the mainstream press. They will support defensive action, and we know the doctrine of the United States when it comes to defensive action is one where it's a very blurred line between defense and offense. You're allowed to do preemptive strikes, for instance. We see this with Israel all the time. Israel claims always that it's acting in a defensive manner when that's not the case. And the Saudis would claim this too. They would claim that they're supporting the internationally recognized Houthi forces and that they're defending the rights of Yemen and they're defending Saudi Arabia. They would never say openly that they are committing offensive action in order to kill civilians, which is what they're doing. So when it comes to Biden's words, we see from what he actually said in real context that they are not stopping their support for the war on Yemen at all. The number one thing he can do at this point is to take Ansarullah or the Houthis off of the designated terrorist lists so that at least aid could come in and it will stop the blocking of aid to crucial areas inside of Yemen.
Where millions of people are facing starvation. Tell us what Twitter users have been saying about this story.
The first one that we pulled up here is from a user called Syrian Girl. She says, Biden didn't pull troops out of Yemen. There was no U.S. troops in Yemen. He is simply saying the U.S. is no longer going to back Saudi Arabia's offensive operations. So now the starvation of Yemeni children will be labeled as defensive operations. We have another one here as well from a different user who says that the Saudi crooks should be held to account. The Yemeni people suffered because of their actions, and the day will come when their own people will rid of these crooks.
All right, Robert and Lakesh. Robert, thanks. And now to other news. French President Emmanuel Macron has criticized social media networks for restricting former U.S. President Donald Trump's access to their platforms at the end of his presidency.
Unique way to preserve our democracies is to reestablish a public and democratic order in this new space where our people think, live, and more because of the pandemic as well, I have to say. And this new regulation, this new governance, in a certain way, has to be democratic and discussed between our leaders. And I think this is very important, and for me, this is one of the critical challenges of our times.
Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter silenced former U.S. President Donald Trump during his last days in power after his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol in a violent insurrection on January 6th. Twitter permanently shut down Trump's account, Real Donald Trump, which had 89 million followers. UN Chief Antonio Guterres has once again called on the Israeli regime to stop its illegal settlement activity on Palestinian land and further support the distribution of coronavirus vaccines on occupied land.
The special coordinator continues to encourage Israel to help address the priority needs of Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territory and to support COVID-19 vaccine availability more generally, which is in line with Israel's obligations under international law.
Addressing a Palestine-focused panel, Guterres expressed his support for the upcoming Palestinian presidential and legislative elections and reiterated that votes in the illegally occupied Jerusalem outwards must be included in the elections. More than a month into the UK's third lockdown, and many rough sleepers have not been housed. During the first lockdown, at least 29,000 people were given shelter and food so they could self-isolate. That was during the first few months of the pandemic. The scheme quietly ended in May, and it has not been revived, despite the winter months and the UK's toughest weeks battling the virus. Bianca Rahimi has more in this report.
Every winter, there is a spike in avoidable deaths among rough sleepers as temperatures plummet. This year could be catastrophic, with more people sleeping rough than ever before. There was a 21% increase in rough sleeping in London in 2020. More than 70,000 households have been made homeless since the start of the pandemic, and young people make up 11% of that figure, which is an historic high. There was a staggering 118% increase in new referrals of young people from April to August 2020, compared with the same period the year before. The reasons being unemployment, rent arrears, financial instability, and evictions. Before the pandemic hit, the British government made an election manifesto commitment to end rough sleeping by May 2024. But the Everyone In campaign the government's communities, housing, and local government department launched after the pandemic first hit, immediately housing nearly 30,000 people, has proven the problem can be solved much sooner if the will is there.
So many homeless people you see on the streets all the time, more than ever. And it doesn't seem to be a priority at the moment.
You see people all over the place. There's a man outside Tesco's, wrapped up in his little blanket, fast asleep. He's got nowhere else to go. We've got people camping out down there. And if people, sometimes their tents and everything else are destroyed or burnt. They've got nowhere to go, except in gutters, doorways, around back alleys. The government are doing nothing.
The kind of budget deficit is probably in the red, and the total kind of government expenditure is extremely high. I think it's probably a very tough time for people to be spending, you know, for the government to keep handing out money in certain circumstances when it's the taxpayer paying for it. It's a certain situation. It's tough, and then there's obviously homelessness is a massive issue. And I think all homeless people should be offered kind of shelter and things like that. I think that's really important.
What happens at night?
I'll just go back to my tent.
So you sleep in a tent? You don't go to a shelter. Why don't you go to a shelter?
Because St Mungo's supposed to come and help me, but they didn't. And someone said about putting me on Streetlink. Streetlink didn't come out either.
In a UK first, homeless people have been made a priority for the COVID-19 jab after Oldham Council in Manchester took matters into its own hands and vaccinated its rough sleepers alongside those over 80.
With the new variant of COVID-19, which spreads much easier, and the cold weather setting in, anyone without a home is in a very precarious situation. Rough sleepers have an average lifespan of only 45 years, so they must be made a priority. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Covering two stories that have been trending on Twitter in this segment. First off, the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, the teenager accused of fatally shooting two men and wounding a third during protests over the killing of a black man named Jacob Blake, if you recall, shot seven times in the back by a white police officer. And this all happened in August last year. Months later, where is Kyle Rittenhouse? Well, let's bring in Richard Sudan with that story and all the details. Richard.
I think you've hit the nail on the head with your introduction, Saeed, and always good to talk to you. Yes, indeed, Kyle Rittenhouse, the man who shot and killed two people at a Black Lives Matter protest in Kenosha in Wisconsin, is walking free. He's at an undisclosed location, and because of this, the prosecutorial services have issued a fresh arrest warrant. But in many ways, the question really is, how did Kyle Rittenhouse post bail in the first place? It raises all sorts of questions about the legitimacy of the United States to call itself a fair democracy. But I suppose in many ways, Saeed, America is at least living up to its reputation as the land of the free, in the sense that Kyle Rittenhouse is walking free, Breonna Taylor's killers are walking free, Trayvon Martin's killer, George Zimmerman, is walking free. Eric Garner's killer is walking free. And the man who killed Mike Brown in Ferguson, police officer Darren Wilson, is also walking free. So in many ways, the wider issue is also about restorative justice in the United States. questions about reparations and also disparities in terms of policing, the prison system, education, healthcare, and so on. But, you know, you and I could discuss this, Saeed, and there are literally hundreds of examples, and I mean hundreds of examples, where it's arguable that the killers, you know, and the victims are not going to receive justice, and, you know, people that carry out these grave travesties of justice walk free again and again and again.
And also, Richard, a question about the fact that cash bail, to put it that way, the fact that this young man has been able to accumulate that kind of money in order to be able to post bail and walk free and then disappear.
Well, just on that point, remember the killer of George Floyd, Derek Chauvin, initially posted bail too. And I think that was around $1 million. Again, where did he get the money from? Of course, Derek Chauvin, I think, has since been arrested and been charged. And he's facing trial, I think, in March. But again, it begs the question, how on earth do these people walk free in the first place? And of course, not many people are really expecting this situation to change under Joe Biden. Even if there was a radical platform and agenda of change on the table, which there really isn't, because let's not forget, Joe Biden has broken his promise to take immediate action on policing and mass incarceration. So all of these issues really feed into the headline that we looked at regarding Kyle Rittenhouse. And I think a lot of people are really making the connections here, Saeed. There's a much wider context.
The voices of
this
some
story.
Of those people, Richard.
Absolutely. Let's go first to a tweet from Tariq Nasheed, who says, "So killer Kyle Rittenhouse was released on bail after killing two people, allowed to hang out at a bar with white supremacist terrorist group, the Proud Boys. Now the prosecutors can't find him. The privilege is coming down like an avalanche of mayonnaise with this story." And C. Fishy tweets, "Jacob Blake was shot 7 times in the back and is paralyzed. Kyle Rittenhouse murdered 2 people with a weapon he was carrying illegally and gets the bar hop with his mum and feels free to violate his parole." And if we've got time for one more, let's go to Sharinsky, who simply says, "Kyle Rittenhouse is free. Most of the ones who stormed the Capitol are free." Just a reminder, many of the white supremacists who stormed the Capitol in the U.S. on January the 6th are, lo and behold, also free.
And Richard, while we're in the United States, tell us what's been happening with the former President Donald Trump, the man who was behind a lot of what we've been talking about over the past 4 years here.
Well, shocking for a headline here, Saeed. I hope you're sitting down. Donald Trump rejects a request for testimony in the Senate impeachment trial. In many ways, this was predictable. It doesn't really tell us anything new about Donald Trump, because, of course, many would argue Donald Trump has basically trampled all over any semblance of a true democratic process at every single juncture. Of course, Donald Trump actually may well still face a number of court cases and subpoenas, but of course, you know, he's standing to be impeached twice.
Richard, I think right now is, will the impeachment managers, the Democrats, be able to require him to actually appear and testify under oath?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question, and it really depends on which kind of legal expert you consult on the issue. But what we can be absolutely sure about, with no doubt, I think we can safely say, is that Donald Trump is going to do everything within his power to really avoid any true sense of accountability, as he's done throughout his premiership when he was president, and others would say,
He still seems to have a lot of support in his Republican Party, Richard. Last thing that came out, Marjorie Taylor Greene was also facing all kinds of charges herself. The far-right Republican politician has said today that Trump owns the Republican Party. So a lot is going to happen as we move forward, and I'm sure you're going to bring it all to us. But let's hear some online voices on this.
There's a lot of them. Father of Two says, "I remember Trump saying people that refuse to testify or take the fifth are guilty." Peter Windhorse says, "Trump refuses to testify the accused and will not appear at trial. We have two choices. One, subpoena him to appear to be arrested. Two, run the trial without him. And since he won't appear in court, ladies and gentle people, he is guilty of all charges." And Deep Thought tweeted, "Twice impeached President Chicken. I mean, Trump is afraid to testify on his own defense. Only guilty people refuse to testify. What a chicken.
All right. On that note, we're going to bring this broadcast to an end. Richard Sedan, Richard, thank you. And thank you. Goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on February 18, 2019 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, during a meeting with the people of East Azerbaijan. The meeting was held at Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh in commemoration of the anniversary of Tabriz Uprising of February 18, 1978.
I do not forget the beginning of the revolution when Imam entered the country on the 12th of Behman. He said in Beheshta Zahra, I will form a government. He promised to form a government and the ground was completely prepared. Well, I do not remember exactly which day it was. It was either on the 14th or 15th when Imam summoned us. It was the Revolutionary Council, us, which was in charge of preparing the ground for the formation of the government. I was a member of the Revolutionary Council, as well as certain other individuals. Imam sent for us. We went to meet with him at Alavi School. He said to us, "Did you do it? Notice that this is the right measure. What have you done about it? What have you done about the formation of the government? Why have you not taken the initial steps?" This is what awareness of time and seizing opportunities means. Then, 1-2 days after that, Imam appointed the members of the interim government. He issued an edict and things continued like that. This is awareness of time.
Allah, Allah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Success of the people of Tabriz, it was God who blessed your move, was due to awareness about the developments of time. They understood that it was time to strike. The ruling government provoked the people with the mistake that it made, and it made another mistake on the issue of Qom. When it martyred a number of people from Qom, so the ground was prepared. How should one put this prepared ground to use? The best opportunity was to mourn on the 40th day after the event in Qom. The people of Tabriz understood this. The 40th day arrived and it turned into an emblem of the movement, the uprising and the revolution. they seized the opportune moment and they used it in the best way possible. So God bless this movement. This is a lesson. My dear ones, today the Islamic Republic enjoys the best opportunities. Today there's the opportunity to work. Today there's the opportunity to move, a movement by the government, by the nations and by the officials, each in their own area and within the scope of their own duties. Today's youth should move and seize opportunities. Today, the conditions are suitable. We have a large population, a large country, and so many capacities, some of which I mentioned in my statement.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Africa Today.
Africans have for decades been used for unethical clinical trials by large Western pharmaceutical companies in clear violation of their basic human rights. There have been many incidents of unethical experimentation, clinical trials lacking properly informed consent, and forced medical procedures in Africa. The clinical trial of the Pfizer drug Trovan in Nigeria is one of the examples. One of the victims harmed during a 1996 experiment in Nigeria by the U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer elaborates on her suffering. Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today, which is focusing on the long history of crimes committed by Western scientists and pharmaceutical giants in Africa. These crimes have come into focus amid the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Since the outbreak, there have been concerns that history will repeat itself and Africans or people of African descent will be used by Western pharmaceuticals to conduct unethical clinical trials for COVID-19 drugs and vaccines. So join us till the end of the show as our experts give you an in-depth analysis on this issue affecting hundreds of millions across Africa.
Pharmaceutical crimes in Africa. Western countries have a long history of illegal and unethical medical testing in Africa. Medical colonialism is a chapter of colonial history in Africa that was not closed and is again in the news amid the COVID-19 virus ravaging many countries in the world. Early April last year, Jean-Paul Mira, head of intensive care at Cochin Hospital in Paris, put forward the idea that tests for coronavirus vaccinations should be carried out in Africa, where he claimed there are no masks and no proper medical care. The research director at France's National Health Institute, INSERM, agreed.
Alors vous avez raison, et d'ailleurs on est en train de réfléchir en parallèle à une étude en Afrique justement pour faire ce même type d'approche avec le BCG, un placebo. Je pense qu'il y a un appel d'offres qui est sorti, il va sortir, et je pense qu'on va en effet sérieusement réfléchir.
This suggestion outraged the director general of the WHO, Tedros Adhanom, himself an African from Ethiopia, who said that Africa will not become a testing ground for COVID-19 vaccines.
It was a disgrace, actually, and appalling to
to hear during the 21st century from scientists that kind of remark. And we condemn this with the strongest terms possible. But we assure you that this will not happen in Africa.
Clinical trials by Western pharmaceutical giants in Africa are not always conducted according to leading ethical guidelines. This puts clinical trial participants at risk of being physically harmed or having their rights violated. At the same time, excluding the continent from ongoing pandemic research is not the answer. Clinical trials can be ethically done, and many African countries and institutions now have ethics review boards to oversee medical research.
Amid reports that plans were afoot to conduct unethical COVID-19 vaccine trials in the country by Western research institutions, Kenyan president said that the country will only allow such trials if they follow internationally accepted protocols.
Once we have reached an area where these trials can be tested on humans, fellow Kenyans, as we have been briefing you on a regular basis, we shall keep you informed and we shall let you know, and nothing shall be done in the dark. You will be informed.
Now, for an incisive analysis on the unethical and criminal conduct of Western pharmaceutical companies in Africa, we are joined by Mustafa Traore, an academic, political analyst, and founder of AnOpenEye.org. We also have with us here Dr. Yurga Gelawoldeyes, a researcher and lecturer at the Curtin University Center for Human Rights Education in Australia. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time. And we start off with Mr. Gelow. Africa has, for over 100 years, been a testing ground for pharmaceutical companies from the West. They've been conducting unethical clinical trials for drugs. Now, clearly, medical experimentation is entrenched in the history of racism and colonialism. What's your take?
Thank you. I think that is true, because colonialism and racism is not simply the occupation of land and administering people and ruling them. For Africans, or generally for black people in particular, colonialism and racism has a particularly personal impact. They experience it in their body. So colonialism involves the colonization of the black body. The human body itself becomes a colonial property. Within that framework, colonial experimentations and the gathering of not just experimentation, but generally knowledge from Africans was conducted by treating the people as having no rights, no dignity or agency.
Thanks for that, Dr. Gelow. Now, can you give us examples on how colonialists used unethical means to conduct medical experiments on Africans?
We can take examples, for example, from Namibia in the early 90s, where sterilization techniques were applied on Herero tribes. We can take examples of controlling African populations using contraceptives such as Bipropovera in Zimbabwean women, and also in Ghana. We can also take examples where Africans were given the agent that causes trypanosomiasis or sleeping sickness without their consent and knowledge. All of these examples tell us or show us that colonial knowledge or medical knowledge was collected from Africa without the consent, without the participation of the people, and in a way that also deprives the use of those medications or knowledge back to Africans.
Now, let's bring in Mr. Mustafa Traore. What's your opinion on unethical clinical trials by Western pharmaceutical companies on African people?
It seems that for some, in the past, black people, Africans, were the missing link between the monkey and human beings. So we know that scientists have always carried out experiments on animals first before trying the different medicines on human beings. So this is why it has been the case and for 100 years now, it's still going on. So we've got to be very vigilant with what's happening right now at the moment.
Mr. Traore there says that Africans must be vigilant to stop global pharmaceutical giants from using them as guinea pigs. Back to you, Dr. Gelow. Even after the end of colonialism, Western countries, which claim to be champions of human rights, allow their pharmaceutical companies to conduct unethical trials on Africans. There appears to be no end in sight for these. Will this unfortunate trend continue?
That colonial exploitation was put into new systems. One good example could be the ways in which pharmaceuticals, for example,